attitude. We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
The independence case is a powerful one.
Another future is possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I am delighted to be joined once again by Armin Tesfaye, the BAME rep for Open Labour and an activist with the 1987 caucus. Welcome back to the podcast, Armin.
It is absolutely fantastic to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, the first question that I'd like to ask you is, for those who aren't perhaps aware as to what the 1987 caucus is, could you give a brief explanation as to what the 1987 caucus is and why it was started?
Yeah, so the 1987 caucus is a group. It is just an informal group, but just a group of young black male members of the Labour Party. We were formed to, first of all, just be a group of young black male members, so to improve representation in that throughout the Labour Party movement, from MPs all the way down to local party officials, and to also raise black issues within the Labour Party and the Labour movement. We have a WhatsApp group where we encourage each other, we give each other opportunities to be involved in areas and just, you know, hype them up to be areas, and externally we, you know, talk to a lot of organizations, we talk to all the factions, we and the trade unions, in how to improve and then to encourage the black male members in their areas to higher places within their parties and movement.
Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic cause and one that has, you know, obviously attracted a significant amount of attention and praise and support. I mean, when you first became involved with the caucus, what were your sort of like initial ambitions? Was it just more thinking of it in terms of a networking group or a support group? What was it that sort of like first made you think when you became involved with it and when other people became involved with it and started it? What was it that made you think, right, this is something that we really need to do, we really need to promote as much as possible?
Well, yeah, well, this all started all the way back in, I want to say, early 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So literally just before the pandemic. I'm lucky to say I was there from right the beginning. And this all started in, I want to say, January or February, where there was a rally for Dawn Butler for Deputy Leader in London. And I went with a lot of other people. One of the people I bumped into was a guy named Jermaine Jackman, who I met, and he said how he was talking about his NEC campaign in that rally. And I had a chat with him because I was like saying, you know what? He was running at the time. I had to say he was running for the NEC BAME rep. So this was way before the NEC campaign in late 2020 during the pandemic. This was when they were electing the first BAME representative for the NEC for the first time in Labour's, well, for the first time directly elected and not through BAME Labour. But Jermaine was talking about that. And then afterwards, I just caught up with him and basically said, hey, it's great seeing you there and great seeing another black man, because it's not a lot around within, especially young black men. And he was like, yeah, I noticed that when I'm traveling the country, and not a lot of us, but we have to, you know, stick together. Afterwards, he lost, sadly, and he didn't lose because of membership. In fact, he got the most membership votes. He had run a really impressive campaign. But then we found out that it was because of affiliate votes, because it was an electoral college. And so he sadly failed. But afterwards, he said, you know, I'm not going to let the momentum for my campaign fail. So after that, he phoned me, well, just before actually the results, he phoned me and he'd say, hey, one of the things I've learned is that it's not just a thing that we discuss. I get that everywhere. So I'm going to put together a mini network of just black men, and we'll have to wait and see how it goes. Do you want to be involved? And I was like, okay, sure. And then we founded the 987 caucus. We wrote something. We sent it to Sienna. We had to Twitter up. And then I just started to get a lot more involved from then on. I helped out any way I can. I raised it within Open Labour, which I'm very proud to be the Brain Rep. We got great, significant support from them. And then it just kind of grew from there, really. I'll stop it there.
So in terms of kind of like the reaction that you have got to the group, I mean, I presume most of it has been positive. Has any of the reaction you've got in any way surprised you at all?
Surprised? First thing, it was like a lot of like general good things.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, really, really happy feedback. Basically saying it's great that you're doing this, you know, keep on doing this, solidarity and all that sort of thing. A lot of encouragement, a lot of surprise when we pump out the statistics of your black male representation. First of all, it's really hard to get the statistics because it is very, it is first very, very low, and people don't technically want to get those things out.
Yeah, yeah.
But one thing I was surprised of really was the loudest bunch, the people who were loudest, and that was black women members. Who was like saying, yeah, it's great that you're doing this. Some of the biggest cheerleaders for us, the biggest cheerleader for us is Dawn Butler, who always attends us, who always hype us up. And she was just amazing about when we started off, because we didn't know where this was going. She just said, just keep doing, just keep pushing those buttons. And, you know, from all over the country, you know, black women, just encouraged us a lot when going through this. And, you know, some will say, you know, if black male representation increased, they had the most to lose, but we can't think like that. And they don't, thankfully, they don't think like that. They think, no, we need more black voices, and we especially need more black male voices. And we're going to do all we can to help you because you guys are amazing. And I was really surprised by the reaction from there.
In terms of, I mean, obviously, unfortunately, there is always going to be negative reaction to any BAME group, because unfortunately, you know, racism is something that even within the Labour Party we have of course seen. Is there something, do you think, about political parties that really needs to change, that even a very progressive party like the Labour Party still has racist members to it? Do you think that it's something that's wrong with the current structures of political parties, or do you think that it's something more to do with wider society?
That's a good question. Pretty good question. I think in terms of political parties, I think we always say we are an inclusive bunch. We really need to test that. Parties are important in British society. They're important in British politics. I have to say, because they hold so much power and influence, there'll be people who would use anything to gain those powers and influence, even if that means making this party a less inclusive space. We know that from everywhere. So that includes, you know, not only anti-black racism, but also we saw it with anti-Semitism, we saw it with misogyny, we saw it with transphobia and homophobia.
Yeah.
And because people were so vindictive towards power, you know, people will be willing to do anything for that. And I think definitely there's a lot more for parties to do. And I think, of course, factionalism is another big thing. Of course, in 2020, I thought it was one of the worst years because we were all hunkered indoors. We didn't have a lot to do. And so we all tried to organize within the party. And of course, with the NEC, internal NEC elections, that was very, very vindictive, very, very...
Yeah.
Because it's very, very important, but also like you saw a lot of things. And so I think I do believe factionalism has a space. If done well, factionalism can help the party understand the different areas of socialism, because socialism is huge, it's vast, and we need to debate those different points. But we often do factionalism the wrong way, which is going down to hunger, down to personal tactics, and not we fail, and I think factionalism was one of the big reasons why black male representation is so bad, is because they don't care about this. They only care about which side you're on or which leader you support. And I think that really needs to change. And I think there's been a general, there's been an acceptance that that needs to change, and credit to both the left and the right of the party. They both accept that things need to change, and they're doing their what they can to encourage people of color to stand more in these internal elections and in these areas.
Mm. And I think it's I mean, you raised the point related to factionalism there and the divide between left and right, but of course we see it in terms of the political spectrum as well, don't we, with of course accusations of racism within the Conservative Party going right to the very top of the Conservative Party. Do you think that when people from, you know, whether they be certain ethnic minority backgrounds, see politicians like, for example, the Prime Minister being able to get away with saying things that are quite frankly offensive and downright racist, do you think that that puts people off from those groups getting involved in politics, because they think, well, if he's allowed to become Prime Minister having said things that are frankly deeply offensive, what's the point of us getting involved?
I think that's a pretty great way to put it to me, but also I think for a lot of people, they might have the opposite reaction, which means, well, if they can do it, I can. And but also the fact that what people say in politics is so terrible, I need to get involved to change things for the better. And that's how I got involved in politics in the first place. Seeing, I joined the Labour Party when I was 16. So Brexit just happened. You know, we left the European Union, and I was really concerned with the future of the country. And so I was like, what can I do to change things? And my mum gave me a bright idea, was to join the Labour Party. You know, sometimes I wish she never said that. but that is how things are. I think in terms of, to be in politics, of course, the sad thing is, to be in politics and to do anything meaningful in life, you need to have thick skin. You need to really get, not be afraid to be in a battle for things. And being in politics develops that for you. And even when you have those things said to you, or you had certain things said to your community, it's tough. But the beautiful thing is, you could, the response could be one of great solidarity and ones of great, you know, importance. And so that's, you know, that's the other side of things.
Yeah. And do you think that's why groups like the 1987 Caucus are so important in giving black activists, particularly young black men, that support that, you know, they need in terms of getting perhaps involved or even or more involved with politics and the Labour Party than perhaps they are?
Absolutely. And I think one great thing about the 1987 Caucus, it gives people, you know, there'll be people, and if there are people in the 1987 Caucus who have no idea the intricacies and the internals and any idea or any information about the Labour Party or how to get selected or how to do this, that and the other. And then there are people who do have that experience, who do have that expertise, who do have that knowledge. And one great thing is we share that knowledge between each other to know what to do when things happen, what to say, who to say it to, who to contact, and those sort of things. And one great example I found out just yesterday, one of our members got selected for council a council seat. So that was great news for us, because the last time we checked in the 2018 election, only 87 in the whole country of councillors are black men. And so at least we got 88 from us. And so I think in terms of of those networks. It is so, so important to have those networks, because I remember when I first joined the party, I didn't know anyone. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't know who to make friends with. And going into my first party meeting was a very much of case of, I don't know what I'm doing here. Very much of, okay, what do I do? And so we need those friends, we need those networks. And I definitely got a lot from meeting friends, from speaking to people and expanding my knowledge in that area. And so those networks and those things are so, not only in politics, but everywhere in life, is so important.
Absolutely. I'd like to just turn our attention for a moment back to one of the things that was central to the last time you were on the podcast, when we did a special on Keir Starmer's first year as leader of the Labour Party. And that was how Keir Starmer had done as a Labour leader. And obviously it's a few months on since we did that podcast. So how do you think he's done since we recorded the podcast? Do you think he's gotten better as a leader of the Labour Party, worse, intermediate? What are your thoughts?
You know, ever since I graduated from uni, I've tried to become more constructive in life. I think, I'll be honest, when he first, like, in the, when the year started, you could tell that he was really, really, I think he was struggling a bit. But you know what? I felt like maybe he's grown into it. I think I've gotten a lot more used to Keir Starmer's leader. And I think I still get frustrated sometimes when he has the information. But I think very much recently he's grown into the role. I think he's become better at some things. There are things I'll disagree with all the time. You know, I'm the only person I'll I will agree with 100% is myself, and that is saying a lot. And even then, that's not 100% certain. But on Keir Starmer, I've grown to see what he's trying to do, and you know, I think in terms of what happens in India, he's been doing fine. I'm not going to say he's the greatest leader since the, I know, ghost of Clement Attlee. But listen, you know, it's, I don't know, it's 2 years to election. I don't know if he's going to win it or not. But I think he's just been doing fine. Not great, not terrible, but fine. There's still a lot to be solved, but especially on anti-black racism. Well, on transphobia, I could see he's trying to move more into a pro-trans rights position, which is great. Especially over conference when there was a lot of pressure. On anti-black racism, I actually had a chance to meet him in a Black History Month, and you could tell that he's really trying, even though he doesn't really know what to say and what to do, but he's really, really trying. So credit to him on that. And we talked about PMQs. His performances have become a little bit better. But, you know, overall, he's just been doing fine. But, you know, let's wait and see until more election results come in, especially with the London one next year.
Yeah. And before that London election result, we've also got two by-elections coming up in the next month, one in Old Bexley and Sidcup, and the other in North Shropshire. Now, what do you think are going to be the main issues going into those by-elections? One, of course, caused by Owen Paterson's resignation after he was found to break lobbying rules. I mean, do you think that that's something that's going to overshadow the by-elections, particularly the one in Paterson's former constituency of North Shropshire? Or do you think that there are going to be other issues that the voters are going to focus on in those two by-elections?
One thing I usually get in by-elections, and one thing that I found out quite clearly, is that yes, the national issues are important, but local issues are often very, very much like underestimated. And so national journalists will come to these areas and basically say, we want to talk about national issues. I remember Hartlepool, and we all saw that. One of the biggest issues regarding Hartlepool was the closure of police stations in that area. The greatest trick the Conservatives ever pulled was making Hartlepool believe that that the police closures was caused by Labour, by the local Labour council, not by national Tory cuts. But in terms of the by-elections, the two by-elections coming up, I think it's great. Well, one thing I have to say is both of them are in safe Tory seats. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not really in a mood of like reading into them and say, well, 2 years time, this will show 2 years time that this will happen and that will happen. Mm-hmm. And plus these sort of by-elections might usually have a low turnout. We'll have to wait and see. Especially, you know, the weather's quite crap. you know, those things happen. And so, especially North Shropshire, you know, people, as I say, oh, it's going to be a Tory seat, but how many people, they're going to bring back a Tory and probably around the same numbers. They might be a drop and that might be related to Tory sleaze. But I highly doubt it. And all Bexley and Sidcup, I think it'll be the same. They'll probably return a Tory, maybe because I think that will be a little bit interesting because it is sort of that blue wall scene and we're all wondering whether that blue fade is an actual electoral thing rather than people desperately trying to recreate the red wall, but Tory. But we have to wait and see what happens in those areas.
And you mentioned the London elections that are, of course, coming up next year. I mean, what are you thinking of in terms of the results of the London elections? Are there any particular races that you're going to be focusing on and looking at and potentially campaigning for?
Well, first of all, I've got to concentrate on my own local council in Enfield. I'm Enfield and proud, so I have to concentrate. I want to put all my heart and soul into that because I love my patch and I love the Labour and I love the Labour councils. I want to keep a Labour council in Enfield. So that will probably be it, but it'll be very, very interesting, of course. Especially a year after Sadiq Khan, the mayoral elections to Sadiq Khan, and it was seen as a little bit disappointing. The fact that, you know, 10 years ago, London was always very, very close between the Tories and Labour, but then nowadays we're very, very disappointed that we didn't win the mayoral elections in the first round. Shows you how much politics has changed. But also, you know, yeah, it was disappointing, but in terms of the London council elections, I think one thing might be interesting to see how many people will actually go to Greens or will actually go to Lib Dems as an alternative for Labour, because I think ever since Keir Starmer came in, like, I think people really underestimate like how much the Greens have grown. I think I saw a statistic that there are more Labour voters who went to Green since Keir Starmer's leadership than Sun readers in circulation. And of course, with the Labour leadership writing for the Sun and that kind of stuff, you know, it puts everything in perspective. So we have to wait. I don't want to be boring. I don't want to be like, but we have to wait and see, especially as we come closer to the day. We don't know what will be the political issues that will dominate the day. Probably stuff like policing, probably stuff like the environment, transport, you know, those sort of things, but those pop up. I do hope we don't resort to NIMBYism, because, you know, I hate NIMBYism, because housing is such an important issue. And when people try to go into NIMBYism, especially in Enfield, I basically go to them and say, well, what you're saying is that I don't deserve to own a home here, because, you know, that's what you're saying. You're saying that we shouldn't build houses, so you're saying I don't deserve to own a home. You're saying you're fine, let's not buy houses for the next generation, build houses for the next generation. But those Labour councils up and down the country for these local elections really need to think big, especially in terms of housing, to make sure that you know, homes are built, good homes are built, because that is so, so important, because we are facing a generation that will not own homes. And I think that will be an economic catastrophe. I'm not an economic nerd, but, you know, I feel like that doesn't sound right. You know, when in like, what, 50, 60, 70 years, we'll have an entire generation of pensioners who are renting, you know, that will be, you know, something I don't want to think. But then again, you know, on a bright side, the planet could burn by then, so we might not even live till then. But those are the things that we have to consider going into the local elections next year.
Certainly an upbeat note to end on, Arvin.
Sorry.
It's all right. No, we may be able to save it with the last question. And the very last question that I have to ask you is this. We're coming up to Christmas, and people are obviously going to be buying Christmas presents galore. So my final question to you is this. If you had to buy one Christmas present for the Prime Minister and for Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party, what Christmas presents would you buy for those two?
Oh, man, that is a good question, and I am so... in terms of the Prime Minister, I am, you know, I'm from Eritrea. So Eritrea, which is in East Africa, just above Ethiopia. It also has one of the populations of the highest, with the highest refugee populations, of course, very, very topical considering what's happening this week.
Yeah.
And I think with the Prime Minister, not only the Prime Minister, those government's comments regarding refugees and immigrants, it's very, very disheartening, especially for me as someone who is a son of refugees. So I would buy the Prime Minister. I'll send a copy of my mother's book because she recently got herself a PhD, which I'm so proud of. And her PhD dissertation was on trauma in refugees and how she developed a plan, how she just developed a process called Trust, which used digital mobile phones and digital properties to help deal with trauma among refugees. So just to let him know of the stuff that refugees have to go through. They don't travel to the UK because they want to spend their money. They travel to the UK because they want to go for safety. In terms of Keir Starmer, that's even tougher. I would buy Keir Starmer. What would I buy? I would buy him. I'm going to... you know what? I will buy him a tour of my beloved Chelsea Football Club. I used to work there as a tour guide. So I would personally tour him around Chelsea. I'll show him the Champions League because it's not in his beloved Arsenal, the only place in London that has it. But also, you know, something about, you know, Chelsea has always been the epitome of success, even through the tough times. And so... maybe Keir Starmer could learn a thing or two. I mean, that is a really bad answer, but this makes me really appreciate one of my favorite answers was Jeremy Corbyn's when he said, "What would you buy Boris Johnson?" And he was like saying a Christmas Carol, a book of a Christmas Carol, and that was an amazing answer. But yeah, those were the two things that I'll get for Boris Johnson and Keir.
Well, I think those are two fantastic gifts, and I'm sure that I'm sure both of them would. find them interesting gifts to receive. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast, Armin. If people want to find out more about you, about the 1987 caucus, and about your mother's book, where should they go to find out all these various things?
Oh, well, so the 1987 caucus, follow us on Twitter. We got, hopefully we're going to be doing a bunch of stuff in the new year, especially relating to the Ford Report, which I've just heard might be published in January, which is really, really good, really, really important. So we'll be doing a lot of work, a lot of talking with factions and groups over that. In terms of me, literally just follow me on Twitter, Armin Testify. I tweet a lot about, politics in general, but also a lot of Chelsea stuff. In terms of my mom's book, it is Dr. Selam Kidane. And I'll make sure I'll link it somewhere. Afterwards, maybe I'll send you a link.
Yeah, I'll add it into the description.
Yes. So those are the things. Also, if you are in Labour and you, if you are a black man in the Labour Party, give me on the 98 Stone Cold as a DM. We'd love to have hear from you. But also, you know, in terms of open labour, we are doing some very exciting stuff, especially around liberation, which I am penning with Abby Barinski and a bunch of other people. So shout out to them. But those are the things that, you know, you want to say around people.
Fantastic. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Debated Podcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.